Hello and welcome to the Energy Transition Dialogues, a podcast series by EVA India Insights, where we explore the ideas, innovations, and policies shaping the India's energy transition journey. In this episode, we turn our focus to one of the cornerstones of India's industrial growth, the steel sector, and the evolving role of coking coal in its path towards sustainability and resilience. Joining us today is Vinayak Vipul, partner at EY Parthenon India, who will share his perspectives on how India's steel industry can balance its dependence on coking coal with nation's decarbonization goals and what it means for the future of industrial transformation in the country. Vinayak, a very warm welcome to you and thank you for joining our podcast.
Thank you, Pallavi, for having me.
Thank you, Vinayak. Now, to begin with, how is India's demand for coking coal evolving and what are the challenges that do you see the domestic reserves pose?
Okay, so India's coking coal demand is directly linked to the steel production, which is done in the country. Given that a large part of steel is produced through the blast furnace route, so the coking coal demand is likely to rise in the foreseeable future. National steel policy is aiming for around 300 million metric ton of crude steel capacity and at a 70-odd% utilization, around 210, 220 million metric ton will get produced, which then means that from the current demand of around 80, 85 million metric ton of coking coal, it will go up to close to around 135 million metric tons. And In the next 4 to 5 years, so one can see almost 50 to 60% increase in the overall demand for coking coal. Now, this is how the demand is evolving. But when we talk about the challenges, challenges in the domestic reserves, so we have huge reserves, but the biggest challenge is that the ash content of the domestic coking coal is very high. So just to put it in perspective, if internationally, the ash content varies between 9% to 13, 14%. In India, the ash content is above 30%. And to be able to make it usable for the steel industry, one has to wash it. And on an annual basis, we are producing close to around 140 million metric ton of raw coal. And we are likely to produce it in the near future as well over the next 4 to 5 years. But only 15 to 20 million of that will be usable after washing. So again, despite having good quantum of reserves, the quality of coal because of the ash content is not good. And hence the usability is low. And when we look at all the other factors which are driving the exploration and mining of coking coal in India, from the mine development, which gets delayed because of land clearances and a host of approvals that are required, to the washery infrastructure which India has, which is not very advanced right now, and clearly the capacity is very low. This is leading to the shortfall in the domestic supplies, and hence the reliance is very, very high on the imported coking coal.
Thank you, Vinayak. Now, given the reliance on the imports, what risks does it create and how can India build resilience?
Okay. So, like I said, that large quantum of our coking coal is imported, close to around 90% is imported, and multiple risks we are exposed to because of that. Price volatility and price indexation, which is done by the global players and the indexes used, that's one of the biggest risks, followed by the supply security. And we've seen that whenever the weather conditions in countries like Australia and specifically in Queensland, they deteriorate or something happens, or if there are certain geopolitical events which are impacting the seaborne supply of this material, the supply security takes a hit. And most of our imports, in fact, more than 50 to 60% of our imports are from Australia right now. And Australia, because of its geography, the risk gets amplified. While we are trying to mitigate it by sourcing it through Russia, US, Mozambique, But again, because of the weather conditions, because of the geopolitical aspects and the pricing, Indian steel manufacturers are always exposed to this risk. Now, to be able to sort of build resilience or mitigate these risks, clearly one of the steps that Indian suppliers have taken and the government is supporting as well is to diversify the supply sources. So if our dependence on Australia earlier was to get more than 70 to 80% of coking coal, it has come down to around 55 to 60%. But again, this has to be done in a structured manner with these countries, wherein we are just not doing the spot buying, but we are entering into long-term partnerships. And even if it means that we have to invest in developing overseas mines, we should do that. Second point, again, to take care of the weather and weather-related challenges, I think having the right stockpile near the steel clusters, which could mean that for the months of monsoon or before or after, somewhere around 3 to 6 months of stock, if that is kept, then this can sort of provide the cushion to the players against the supply disruptions which happen. And third, clearly, given the reserves that we have of the domestic coking coal, which is currently not usable because of the high ash content, if we were to develop a strong washeries network and wash as much coal as possible, which is coming from the domestic mines, then also some of these supply challenges can be looked at. But to be able to do all this, whether it's imported coal or domestic coal, India as a country has to invest a lot on building its logistics infrastructure. And there are initiatives which are taken to build these dedicated rail corridors and the ports that are coming up with the modern infra which is getting established in these ports. So I think we are moving in the right direction, only the pace is something which we'd have to work on. And then finally, if the mines have to be allotted to the steel players or to the private miners, the way we are doing the auctioning and the transparency around it, that needs to be improved further so that the entire system can be made more reliable.
Thank you, Vinayak. Adding to the previous question on imported coking coal and global supply fluctuations, how do you see the pricing dynamics evolving for domestic players, especially with respect to cost competitiveness and volatility?
Okay, so in the short run, I think we will still be exposed to the pricing related risks. And when I say short run, till I think 2030, next 4 5 years, we will be exposed to these risks because of the supply concentration and the currency linked dependencies that we have. And even with the diversification initiatives that we've taken, given our dependence on Australia, where the index linked FOB prices are highly volatile, and are impacted by the climate changes and the China's spot buying cycles, we will be exposed to these risks. Now, to be able to sort of mitigate these risks in a way to offset the price instability, I think we'd have to, as Indian producers, we'll have to move towards a blended sourcing model, wherein and integrating the lower cost semi-soft Russian coal and the Indonesian mid-volatile grades to trim the fuel mix costs without compromising on the metallurgical properties. That is something that we'd have to start doing. Secondly, I think the term contracting and back-to-mine partnerships, which are on the rise right now, I think we'd have to do a lot more of that. And also for some of the Indian players to participate in acquiring assets in countries like Mozambique and all, we'll have to do that. Along with that, I think players will continue to sort of hedge the risk of currency. Aspects of logistics integration will have to be worked upon, and the domestic beneficiation and the upgrades to the entire infra will be required to be able to stabilize the ex-plant cost structures. These will go a long way in sort of providing some safety and security on the pricing shocks, but will not eliminate the risk altogether. But I think some of these steps can help us manage these issues related to pricing.
Thank you, Vinayak. Now, pivoting towards the steel is also a major emitter. So, what role can technologies like hydrogen steelmaking, electric arc furnaces, and carbon capture play in reducing the dependence on coking coal?
Okay, so like I mentioned that in the foreseeable future, the dependence, while it's reducing, but it will not go down to a large extent, given a lot of investments which players are making right now, or the investments which have been announced for future are in the BF and BOF route of steel making only. But having said that, the technologies which will take us away, and our estimate is that the play of BF, BOF will go down to around 30 to 40% by 2050, and by 2070 is when we are likely to produce all steel as green steel. And the technologies which will take us towards that are the hydrogen-based steel making and the electric arc furnaces. Now, there are some pilots which have already been done for using hydrogen as a fuel. But the costs right now are prohibitive. So at an industrial scale, this as a fuel is not getting used. And government is trying through the National Green Hydrogen Mission to bring the cost down. But realistically, I think it'll take at least 10 to 15 years to start using hydrogen at an industrial scale. And in the midterm, I think blending of gray and green hydrogen can happen within the DRI units. And then in the longer term, when the costs are managed well, that's when the fully green hydrogen can get used. Another thing which our national steel policy is aiming for is to use as much scrap as possible to be able to produce or meet the demand of steel of India. Now, here, electric arc furnaces, they become very, very important technology to be able to use the scrap and all. Again, 35% is what is being targeted here. But my sense is that it will still take some time for India to develop a scrap network for us to be able to use EAF in a meaningful way. And that ecosystem development, I think, should take another 10 to 15 years before this aspiration of 30 to 40% of steel getting produced through the EAF route can be met. And thirdly, I think the carbon capture, which is in play right now, a lot of players have installed CCUS units to bring the emissions down and use as much of these emissions in the process itself, substituting it for fuel. But again, it will require strong policy support, infrastructure development, investment by the private and public players both. And this transition, hopefully in the next 5 to 7 years, would yield result. But not at the pace at which the national steel policy is aiming for. But again, like I said, that we are moving in the right direction. In medium to long term, we should be able to get to that desired state where we are able to manage our emissions better.
Thank you, Vinayak. Now, to cover the policy and regulatory aspect, what kind of policy and regulatory interventions do you think are needed to support both resilience and the sustainability?
Okay, so policy again is required in two parts. First is the short-term resilience, and the second is long-term decarbonization plans that we have. So in terms of the short-term resilience, I spoke about approvals for new washeries, the entire mining of domestic coking coal, providing incentives for advanced beneficiation. These are some of the things that the government can sort of offer as support to the industry. But on the longer term, or for the longer horizon, I think accelerating the use of green hydrogen is an absolute must, and which will mean that providing direct subsidies for the projects which are piloted using green hydrogen, the tax benefits which the producers should get for producing green steel, and even where government acts as a consumer, or government is the largest consumer of steel for all their infra needs and other development which is being done by government. So for that, if green steel or a part of the procurement is mandated to be green steel, where the carbon share is low, then I think industry will be motivated. Industry will start spending or investing in building these new technologies and assets, which can make them qualify for the government projects as well. So again, from the point of view of subsidies, tax benefits, and as a consumer driving the industry to invest in low carbon steel is something which government should work on to be able to drive the long-term resilience. And in terms of the usage of scrap, again, the scrap policy for collection, recycling, and use of it in the EAF, that's where I think government will have to come up with a clear vision and enablers for the industry to sort of invest in this entire ecosystem as well. And in terms of the carbon pricing and green finance, there are tools which government can sort of work back with the financial institutions to be able to sort of facilitate the financing of such projects and infuse direct capital into the hydrogen and the carbon capture units or the circular economy related solutions which are being proposed in the National Steel Policy. So government plays an important role from a policy point of view, and all these areas is where government can sort of support the industry on.
Thank you, Vinayak. Now, with the rising demand, but also global decarbonization pressures, how do you see the steel producers balance these two forces, but and what are the risks and opportunities do you see for them?
So I think a large part of it I've answered already. So in terms of the rising demand and the decarbonization through the use of these technologies that I spoke about, whether it's the green hydrogen or the EAF technology, all this will move us towards producing greener steel. And in terms of reducing our dependence on few countries, investing in stockpiles and upgrading the washery capacity will drive the resilience. But the risks that we are talking about are related to stranded assets. And as an industry, if the investments are made only in the blast furnace technologies, then when the global carbon border taxes they kick in, the Indian players may become less competitive, or they may not be able to sort of supply material to some of the geographies like Europe or Americas. And this is where I think industry will have to sort of think about the long-term future, and with China's position not being clear in the global trade, especially for countries in Africa, where there is a clear drive of not relying heavily on China, and countries in the West. I think India will have to be very clear about how they're producing steel to be able to service these markets. And investment in the low carbon technologies clearly can drive us towards commanding a premium for the green steel that we produce. So it will future-proof our exports as well, And then we can take the leadership position when it comes to the clean steel supply chains. So that's what I see in terms of the strategy for India, to not just cope with the decarbonization pressures, but also to stay competitive in the export market.
Thank you, Vinayak. Lastly, looking ahead, what does a resilient and a sustainable Indian steel sector look like by 2030 or 2040?
Okay, so 2030, I've already spoken about. We will continue, and I'm just summarizing, we will continue to rely on imports, but with a diversified mix of countries supplying us the material and all the other measures which will make us resilient. We are likely to have a better washery capacity. We are likely to have strategic reserves in place. The first wave of hydrogen DRI plants and the modular electric arc furnaces, I think the commercial production will start, but it would not gain the kind of scale to be able to sort of replace the earlier technologies. By 2040, though, the situation is likely to be different. So like I said, that in 15, 10 to 15 years, hydrogen related technologies may get cheaper. So 30 to 40% of our steel could start getting produced through the hydrogen or the EAF route. Blast furnaces will still be there, but a lot of CCUS kind of initiatives will enable them to emit less. And the carbon footprint will go down for these blast furnaces. Likelihood of import dependence being lower is high. And that's partly because of the washery capacity that India will sort of install, but also because coking coal as a fuel will keep declining. So if currently in all our production, 80% is dependence on coking coal, it will come down to 40 to 50% by 2040. And like I said, that by 2070, it should move towards complete elimination. And if that happens, then India could become like a global supplier of the certified low carbon or no carbon steel. And it will enable India to reduce emissions. And not just emissions, but it will lead to higher economic security, better competitiveness, and ensuring that steel sector remains as the backbone for the growth of the nation, and can help build a strong foundation for India as a country.
Thank you, Vinayak, for sharing those valuable insights on the challenges and the opportunities that are shaping the India steel and mining ecosystem.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Pallavi, for giving me the opportunity to share my views.
Thank you, Vinayak. As the energy transition gathers space, conversations like these help us better understand how traditional sectors can evolve to meet the demands of a low-carbon future with resilience, innovation, and strategic foresight. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Energy Transition Dialogues brought to you by EY India Insights. Stay connected with us for more expert conversations on India's journey towards sustainable energy future. This is Pallavi signing off.